This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
We've seen a wave of Eat the Rich TV shows and movies lately. Think of things like Succession, Parasite. But while these stories are fictional, the absurd and outrageous lives of the mega wealthy are very real and often worse. Well, enter Dr. Peter Coleman, who's taken a scalpel and a sense of humour to some of the worst sins ever committed by history's richest figures. And his new book, Sins of the Filthy Rich, explores how envy, greed, wrath, and more have played out in mansions, palaces, and boardrooms through the ages. Peter, it's great to have you back on Drive.
Thanks so much, Warren.
Let's start with the book. What drew you to this idea? Because I feel like it's something that we're all fascinated by.
Yeah, well, I mean, as you mentioned, there is a huge spate of Eat the Rich media at the moment. And I was really curious because I hadn't really seen much deep diving into, in terms of books, the actual true stories. And, you know, people go, oh, is it really as bad as Succession or whatever? And I always go, yes, it's not only is it as bad as, it is often so much worse than anything you see on TV.
You go right back in time as well. Let's look at where we were then and where we are now. Let's talk about the wealth inequality in the world. Where are we sitting?
It's not good. It's getting really, really bad. Now, I mean, over time, it's difficult to say because you're dealing with different economic systems and so forth. But particularly in our modern era, wealth inequality is getting very seriously bad and has gotten much worse since the pandemic. So in America, US billionaires are now 70% richer over the course of the pandemic.
Wow.
Since the pandemic, the top five richest people in the world have doubled their wealth, while 5 billion people have become poorer. And now the top 1% now hold more wealth than the bottom 95% combined.
I wonder if we look at history, how sustainable is that? Do we get to a point where people say, you know what, enough's enough, well, and things shift?
I mean, things do shift. You have things like the French Revolution where there's a whole, you know, enormous resentment. And I think we're really starting to see that bubble up at the moment. Whether that results in positive long-term change is really difficult because, you know, people ask me, you know, what was the most surprising story in the book? And I often, you know, I'll tend to answer, well, what I'm most surprised is that over 2,000 years, we're still doing this. And what particularly surprises me is also the way we idolize the rich. You know, in our current worldview, and particularly since like the Greed is Good era of the 80s, there's this idea of the filthy rich as like these heroes of capitalism. You know, this whole media industry dedicated to celebrating them as these hardworking geniuses who have cracked the code to success, quote unquote. And, you know, my point being that so often these are not people we should be admiring. You know, they are not worthy of our admiration, you know.
And I often hear the trickle-down economics as being the justification to continue with the way that they make their money. Now, one thing I do like about this, if you think, okay, I want to know what the rich get up to, you've also made it funny. How did you strike that balance?
It wasn't always easy. And I do have a few stories in there, say King Leopold II of Belgium, which is quite a dark, horrifying story, but I wanted to be told. But oftentimes what I really want to highlight was the absurdity of these people, because again, they often get, you know, given a huge amount of respect and status. And, you know, talking about the likes of the multimillionaire Brian Johnson, who's trying to live forever, and how he has penis monitoring, or nighttime erection monitoring device. And then he compares his erections with his son's erections and then tweets about it, you know, for example. And, you know, we have...
It is worse, isn't it, in the TV shows?
It's so much worse. And then there was a sheik and his wife, and they went through this acrimonious divorce, and it was discovered that one summer in the UK they spent £3 million, £3 million, I should say, on strawberries. And I just don't know what you would do.
They'd go off.
Well, yeah, what are you doing with the strawberry? I don't understand, yeah.
When you, you mentioned about King Leopold. Let's go back to that time. Mm. What was, I suppose, or who were you surprised the most by in terms of their cruelty or their excessive?
I think King Leopold in particular, so those that aren't familiar with him, you probably really should be, and it's a failing of the way history is taught that we're not more familiar. He really is up there with some of the worst mass murderers of the 20th century. He was King Leopold II of Belgium. He was Belgian monarch, late 19th, early 20th century. He took ownership, quote unquote, of the Congo and basically exploited tens of millions of people to harvest rubber for him at the era of the rubber boom that was going on at the time. And basically, there was mass death. It was horrifying. Like, reading the details, it's just appalling. And the fact that this person has sort of been lost to history, that we don't know about him, he's not up there with people like, you know, Hitler, Stalin, etc., is a real failing in history. So that was something I really wanted to draw attention to.
And I suppose if we do forget about these characters in the, you know, over time, it almost, I suppose you're right, it sort of diminishes the impact that they've had, doesn't it? It's like history just sort of waters it down.
Oh, absolutely. And also we need to learn again, the point I keep returning to is the glorification of wealth in itself. And wealth at all costs. There seems to be this idea that if you become enormously wealthy, then, you know, you're a smart business person, like you're, you know, successful, quote unquote. And what I really want to expose with this book is this isn't by any sane definition success, you know.
We're speaking with Dr. Peter Coleman, author of Sins of the Filthy Rich, which is out today. Peter, now let's talk about the US. We've got Donald Trump there. Let's also talk about, is it Commodus as well?
Commodus, Emperor Commodus,
Are there similarities there in terms of...
look, there's definitely no shortage of demagoguery going on and political exploitation. I mean, it's a difficult one to exactly compare. Commodus had a lot more license to do things like, you know, run his gladiatorial games and, you know, enact all kinds of cruelties and disgusting things. Commodus was one, you know, the book, as you mentioned, is broken down by the seven deadly sins. And Commodus was a real all-timer. Like, he managed to tick so many different sin boxes, it was hard to narrow down. Would I compare with Donald Trump? I think they share a certain, fundamental characteristics that of, you know, certain qualities they exhibit. Yeah, I would say there is a parallel for sure.
I suppose we haven't seen the senators worshipping Donald Trump yet, have we?
Ooh, no. But we're getting close.
We're getting close. we're getting close. You do also take on some major modern figures. Mm-hmm. We're talking Gina Reinhart.
Yes.
What have you found there?
Well, Gina, bless her soul, I went, I discuss, I have breakout boxes in the book called Rich People Say the Darndest Things. And Gina said a few surprising things in her time. And she's particularly married to the idea that really hard work and overtime is the gateway to becoming a millionaire or enormously rich.
It hasn't worked for me.
Well, the thing is, most studies actually indicate that there is no real correlation between hard work equals cash money. And, you know, what studies consistently find is the easiest way to accrue vast sums of money is to have access to financial capital. For example, if you inherit your father's $750 million iron ore business, that gives you a real leg up that hard work and overtime is not necessarily going to give you.
So it could be someone else's hard work and overtime.
Exactly. Precisely, yeah.
Okay, that's good to know. Any, I suppose, sins there we need to know about?
Sins with Gina, oh, bless her soul. I mean, hers didn't fall easily. There's probably a couple in there.
Okay, we'll read.
I think ignorance might be a top one for her. She's very married to certain ideas that I think she might want to revisit.
Okay, what about, how does, I suppose, let's talk about Elon Musk. We've seen some of Elon Musk's recent behaviour, etc. How does Elon Musk say compared to someone like Rupert Murdoch?
Elon Musk was a really interesting one, and they're difficult to compare. I mean, they both, do some extremely questionable things. Elon Musk, was a sort of almost overwhelming person for me to write about because he just produces so much content. There was just almost too much.
And is there another book coming out?
Well, I have actually thought about it because Elon himself, he was just constantly generating new content every moment of the day. But again, it's very interesting with Elon because I think we've seen in recent times, you know, again, this is someone who's the richest person in the world, but exhibits so much insecurity and, you know, anxiety and concern for his status. It's quite fascinating to watch.
Which is sort of, I mean, it sounds silly, but in some ways it's kind of comforting that they still experience the same emotions that the rest of us feel.
Oh, yeah.
Just act them out in different ways.
And I cite a therapist who is actually works a lot with extremely wealthy people. And he actually makes a comment that, you know, yes, they are as miserable as they seem to be on shows like Succession. They're very paranoid. They're very concerned that people aren't friends with them for the right reasons. And also often they lack a sense of purpose because when you have that much money, you don't really have to do anything.
We're on Drive and we're chatting with Dr. Peter Coleman, author of Sins of the Filthy Rich, which is out today. Peter, let's go through, I suppose, the seven deadly sins. Mm. What was the one that consistently showed up in most people?
I mean, greed was extremely common, obviously, and looking into this. And I could have written really an entire book just dedicated to greed. Gluttony was one of the more entertaining ones. But what I discovered with gluttony was that there was a really interesting contrast I found between, say, the robber barons of the late 19th, early 20th century, who famously were the, you know, quote unquote, fat cats that would, you know, gorge themselves on food. And nowadays what we're seeing is a kind of reversal of that, where there's this inverse gluttony where, you know, a lot of millionaires and billionaires have sort of starved themselves to death. And, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow springs to mind on that front. Envy was an interesting one because I would say envy actually plays a huge role in for a lot of these people, but they're very rarely confessed to it. So it's very difficult to know.
What did you discover about anger and power?
Yes, well, there's a lot of wrathfulness. And, you know, again, we see that if we look at the likes of Donald Trump, for example. A huge amount of wrathfulness. There is a huge association between anger and the desire to dominate. But, you know, I'm reminded, I think it's a maybe Eckhart Tolle quote, which is power over others is weakness disguised as strength. And which I really love because I think that that's you know, very much epitomized in some of the behavior that I saw.
Now, we've spoken about shows like Succession, the White Lotus, etc. Do you think these shows have helped fuel, should we call it, rich resentment, or do you think that that's existed for the last few thousand years over time?
I mean, I think what's happened is it goes through ebbs and flows in history. And when people are feeling really buoyed up by their economic situation, again, there tends to be that idealization of the rich because there's the idea that I too could become rich someday. I tend to think there's been a lot of disenchantment with, you know, neoliberal capitalism, particularly since the pandemic, you know, where so many people lost so much based on nothing they'd done wrong. And the gap between rich and poor seems just unbreachable. I think that's when the resentment really rises. And, you know, that's reflected in the media. It's also reflected in the way people are reacting to figures like Luigi Mangione, for example. Mm. Yeah.
Now, if you could sit down and have dinner with one of the subjects that you've written about, who would it be?
Without question, Diamond Jim Brady, favourite person I wrote about. He was in the gluttony chapter. He was basically, you know, self-made business tycoon, a train railway tycoon. He had an enormous appetite. He could eat basically the same amount as 12 people, essentially. He also loved wearing diamonds, but he was also famously incredibly generous, and people would come up to him and he would just give money away randomly. Like, he was extremely generous and just loved the pleasures of life. And to me, he just sounded like a fun time.
Just on that, you do touch on this in the book, and we spoke about it before. If I was one of these people, I wish I was in a position where you could have written about me, for example. Mm. I would like to donate a lot of money. Are they quite philanthropic?
Look, there's levels of philanthropy, but I mean, a lot of the examples I talk about, they don't, in my opinion, extend the kind of philanthropy that they, you know, they could and they really should. I do talk about...
Why do you reckon that is? What is it? Because if you've got so much money... Why wouldn't you? I don't get it.
I think it's an ideological way of seeing the world, basically, where, you know, you see yourself as successful, powerful, you know, so much of your self-identity and sense of worth is tied up with having this enormous wealth. That just becomes a central part of who you are. And, you know, the narrative isn't, you know, that we celebrate incredibly generous people, or not nearly as much as I think it should be. You know, like the narrative so often is, oh, they're so rich, I want to be like them, versus they're so generous, I want to be like them.
Wanting to be like them and thinking that you can be like them, do you think that that's behind, for example, getting people like Donald Trump into power? Because we sit here and we think, oh, my goodness, I can be like that too if I listen to him. Is that part of the process?
Absolutely. Well, there's a fantastic interview with, you know, New York writer Fran Lebowitz, and she actually comments about this very thing. And, you know, she talks about working class people in America voting against their own interests because there's that idea that, well, maybe one day I'll be rich. And she always goes, you're not going to be rich. You're never going to be rich. If you're not rich already, you're not becoming rich. It's not going to happen. And I mean, statistically, she's right. The likelihood of you becoming rich if you're not already rich is incredibly low.
Peter, it's been great chatting with you. Congratulations on the book today. And we look forward to the next installment.
Thank you very much, Warren. Really appreciate
it. Thank you, Dr. Peter Coleman, author of Sins of the Filthy Rich. It's out now. It's 320 pages, isn't it? I think.
Yeah.
320 pages of dropping, jaw-dropping history, scandal and sin, and very funny.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.